We'll conclude our study of Leviticus. And if you feel like I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry. But what is the future that God promises us? What do we have to do to accept and receive that? Anything else? Do we have to obey His word and do what He tells us to do and not question it? But do we always do that? But going the past history with the Israelites, the failures they've had, did God ever leave them? And if you were witnessing to a lost person and they ask you that question, why didn't He just give up on them because they didn't listen to Him? How would you respond to them? Mm-hmm. And even though we do stumble and fall, He takes us back, pick us up. But are there times maybe when we don't learn from that? And we kind of repeat ourselves.
We learn right at the moment, then we repeat.
It kind of goes away because, I mean, you think about, you go back to the very beginning, just like in Genesis, Adam and Eve in the garden. He tells them in verse 28 in chapter 1, He blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over all the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Well, did they do that properly? To an extent, yes, but they failed. But if we go into Genesis 9, verse 1, this is Noah. What happened there? God had been warning the people, telling them. So He blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth." Did Noah follow his instructions? Yes. But people being people, did they take and heed a lesson from that God warned us? But now, I mean, you can't say they saw it because they were all taken away. But even after that, did people follow that? Did people see any disobedience or any compliance along with that? And it goes on, we know from Jacob and on, is, you know, even to his disciples in Matthew chapter 28, 19 and 20, common words we've always heard, he says He makes the promise of His presence always until the end of the age, as we should obey Him in our task. Because it is always God who wills and works in us to bring about glory to His name. It's not Him saying, you know, He's not sitting on a pedestal wanting all these acclamations to come to Him. He's there for us to teach us how to live, obey Him, and then His graciousness to us comes, his love comes to us. He wants us to survive. He wants us to move on. Now, does that mean because I'm a Christian and I live by His word and I do everything right, I'm a good person, everything's taken care of? Mm-hmm. Does it mean I'm going to have everything I want in life? No. do some people take the word of God in that, well, it's telling me here, if I do this, this, and this, he's going to bless me. He's going to give me riches. He's going to give me everything I need.
God supplies what you need, not what you want.
Right.
And our riches comes in other things besides money. And
yeah.
You have your family and your church and your salvation and things that you hate to say you take for granted, but in this day and age when you say riches, it's how much money we have in the bank, how big our house is, how many cars we have, blah, blah, you know, how many versus, you know, like the thankfulness that you have just for your family and your health. I mean, those are riches too.
And when you leave here, you're going to leave just like you come.
Exactly.
And take it with you. You can't take it with you. There ain't going to be no U-Haul behind
right.
You. Right. Well, I told one of my brothers one day.
No. Because the writer has a statement. He says, the accumulation of material possessions or the blessings of physical health are no sure sign that a person is being blessed by God. Because you may look at someone that has everything and you think, well, you know, they're a good Christian. They may not be. They may have gathered those things in the wrong way, so to speak. In the world,
but
right.
That money is not going to do them a bit of good when it comes time for the Lord to take you home.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, and if you read the scriptures, we're told that there is a time for us. So regardless of the cancer center, and we even if we're in remission, when it's our time, he's planned that. That's it. Regardless if you've gone through everything and your health is all back, and it's your time, that's when he's going to take you.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to read, this is Leviticus 26, verses 3 through 13. These are the promises. It says, if you follow my decrees and are careful to obey my commands, I will send you rain in its season, and the ground will yield its crops, and the trees of the field their fruit. Your threshing will continue until grape harvest, and the grape harvest will continue in planting, and you will eat all the food you want and live in safety in your land. He says, I will grant peace in the land, and you will lie down, and no one will make you afraid. I will remove savage beasts from the land, and the sword will not pass through your country. We stop right there. Going back to what God promises us, is his abiding peace in our life. But he's promising us, like we just mentioned earlier, he's going to provide to us the basic necessities of life. He's telling the Israelites here, you know, I'm going to send you the rain when you need it. We see that today. I mean, we complain, and it is hard sometimes when it doesn't rain for a long period of time, but he always supplies. Do we lack food to eat? Do we say, I don't ever? You will, yeah. No. So those things are promised to us. These, even the Israelites there, but he also tells them, you have to harvest it. You have to plant it. You have to work at it, and I'll bring it to you. It's there. But, you know, it's, back to, if he follows my statutes and faithfully observe his commands. Because we can say that God's love for us, we always understand, is unconditional. Like I said, we slip, we fall, we backslide, but he's there to love us and bring us back to him. But does that mean we're going to avoid any discipline in our life if we fail to obey him? You know, I got away with it one time. I'll try it again. Nothing's going to happen to me.
Or you got away with it one time, you go ask forgiveness, and then you can do it again.
Mm-hmm. Because if, like I said, we go back to witnessing to the lost person. If they ask you, well, does his promise come with demands and conditions? You know, you're telling me, and then you're telling me this book is the book of life. And if I break one of these rules in here, what's going to happen? I've seen you do things, but you're still professing and, you know, your love for Christ. So if I've seen you fail, then I'm a failure as it is. Why should I come to your side? I'm just going to continue to live my life the way I'm living it now. I don't want that put on me.
The whole thing is, I have plenty of time to decide to be a Christian. I'm going to live like I want to, and when I get to be 90 years old, I'll decide to repent and be a Christian. So when I do die, I'll go to heaven. But y'all know we're not even promised that we're going to heaven. Exactly. We're not promised how many years we'll be on this earth. It could be if you pass away the day that you're born, or, I mean, you might be live to 100 years old. We're not, but nobody knows. That's just part of your faith, is believing that you're here for his time.
We go back to the rich person. Can the rich person say, you know, I'm good. I'm moving along in life. I've got everything I need. Why should I go back and start obeying his word? But then he loses it all through health issues. Maybe something disastrous. The economy goes bad and his business goes defunct. Does that person then start looking towards Christ for help? Are they, I'll ask this question, are they as prepared to accept not having anything as well as a person who is a faithful believer and understands the word? That, yes, I've lost everything, but I still got your promise here with me.
But it makes you wonder about the people in the depression. Look how many, I mean, you read about it, how many folks committed suicide because they had lost
everything.
Everything. You know? And it makes you wonder, where were they? I mean, were they not Christians? Where was their beliefs? Because, I mean, it wasn't just a few people. It was a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Basically were the people that had put their faith
in their money. That's right.
That's right.
And I mean, it was just...
And their prestige.
And they didn't have anything to believe in.
Right.
And they didn't have
they believed in what they had.
And they believed they'd done it
all
by themselves.
That's right. And that was for them the way out.
Yeah, they didn't have anything to look forward to because it was all gone.
No hope. They didn't have a peace. There was not a hope that we will go through this.
We'll survive. We won't survive without it.
My neighbor's father committed suicide during the Depression and left three daughters, Mary Jo Harden, Karen Harden's her dad, committed suicide. He owned a store in Chattanooga. He had done very well. They were Christians. They'd gone to church and all that, but he couldn't handle it. He committed suicide and left three small children for necessities to raise by herself. That's such a selfish act.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, something just went out in his mind.
Just,
he just couldn't handle it. He just lost
some people's
mind.
Snapped.
Mm-hmm. But he goes on to tell them, verses 7 through 13, he says, you will pursue your enemies, and they will fall by the sword before you. 5 of you will chase 100. 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fall by the sword before you. I will look on you with favor and make you fruitful and increase your numbers, and I will keep my covenant with you. But you will still be eating last year's harvest when you will have to move it out and make room for the new. It says, I will put my dwelling place among you, and I will not abhor you. I will walk among you and be your God, and you will be my people. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt so that you would no longer be slaves to the Egyptians. I broke the bars of your yoke and enabled you to walk with heads held high. He's talking about the enemies. Who were their enemies? And who would we say are our enemies today. We don't say that our enemies are going to die by the sword. Our enemies may die by the word. But he's promising that anything presented before you, I'm going to be there with you. I'm going to protect you. Can we take hope in that as a Christian? That, I mean, if you look at it, yeah, today the word is being distorted. People are mocking Christians. But if it got so bad that you were mocked every day, could you stand strong in your faith and face that mockery back to you? Or would you want to turn away from his word and run and hide?
I don't think we're so much mocked every day. It's just the news every day makes us more aware of how we, how do you put this? The news makes us more aware of where we should focus. How does that sound? That
mm-hmm.
we need to continue. I mean, look, you say, hey, look upward, but that's our should be our focus regardless of what's on the news every day. And there's, I mean, really, we all know there's nothing, quote, right now really good on the news. I mean, they'll do a piece or two about somebody helping somebody or something like that, but the first 20 minutes of the news is the bad things. I mean, the things that are going on in the everyday and the things in the news affects us, whether it be political or folks killing people or, you know, corruption. I mean, that's the first 25 minutes of the news, mm-hmm. and then they'll do a little blurb at the end about something that somebody did. So we see it every day. I know where you're, like, the mockery, it's not like somebody don't stand in front of you all day long and make fun because you're Christian, but we see it on the TV and read it every day of the, they are making a mockery out of us as Christians.
But what gets most people's attention, good news or bad news?
Bad news.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when it's talking about, we go back to the beginning, Genesis, when it talks about Adam and Eve, Noah, owning them. In verse 9 in this chapter of Leviticus, there it says, I will look on you with favor and make you fruitful and increase your numbers, and I will keep my covenant with you. He's not telling us here, do good, do what I ask you to do, and maybe the fruit will grow. And maybe I will bless you. If you do this, then, his promise is just strong in those words to those people. I'm going to be there with you. But he also, in verses 14 and 16, he says, but if you will not listen to me and carry out all these commands, and if you reject my decrees and abhor my laws and fail to carry out all my commands and so violate my covenant, then I will do this to you. I will bring upon you sudden terror, wasting diseases and fever that will destroy your sight and drain your life away. You will plant seed in vain because your enemies will eat it. He says, I will set my face against you so that you will be defeated by your enemies, and those who hate you will rule over you, and you will even flee even when no one is pursuing you. So he tells us, test me, try me. Don't listen to me. This is what's going to happen. I go back to being mocked as a Christian. If you're not strong in your faith and someone mocks you and starts doubting you and questioning you and you don't know how to answer it, what are you going to do? Are you going to be, like he says here, you will then, where did he say it? Those who hate you will rule over you, and you will flee even when no one is pursuing you. He tells us, listen to me. He's going to be there for us. But the question comes up. When someone's trying to be motivated, are they more motivated by a warning or by a blessing? Blessing? But if you're at work and you get a call, come up to my office, I need to talk to you. And, we really like you working here, enjoy you, but we've noticed some things happening, and we want to put this out in front of you, that if these certain things don't change within the next 90 days, we may have to make a decision. Warning. Do you get motivated? Motivated to do a better job, or motivated to find another job?
Well, I was trying to tell Connor the other day the difference between criticism and constructive criticism. I told him, I said, there is a difference, and that's like what you're saying. There is a difference in how you get your motivation.
It's true. Please him and receive his blessing. Because this writer has some things. He says God's promises are precious, but God's warnings are serious. But do we sometimes take his warnings seriously? Or do we just rely upon, well, I've heard this before. Nothing's ever happened.
But about the forgiveness, because I've done this before, and all I have to do is ask for forgiveness, and it's a clean slate to be helpful for me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask for forgiveness.
But we talk about his return, or his promises back to us. Verses 42 through 45. He tells us, he says, I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and my covenant with Isaac, and my covenant with Abraham, and I will remember the land, for the land will be deserted by them, and will enjoy its Sabbath while it lies desolate without them. They will pay for their sins because they rejected my laws and abhorred my decrees. Yet in spite of this, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will destroy them. No, I will not reject them or abhor them so as to destroy them completely, breaking my covenant with them. I am the Lord their God, but for their sake I remember the covenant with their ancestors whom I brought out of Egypt, in the sight of the nations to be their God. I am the Lord. That along right there, the promise is there. He's not going to forsake us. He's not going to forget us. We as a people might leave him, but he's always going to be present. You go back to David. David was a good man. David did a lot of good things. But what happened in David's life? Was he perfect? He had sin in his life. He experienced different things, but God's mercy always kept coming back to David, and David is repenting, and we see the end results there. But can we assume that God only intends goodness for us? But along with that, can we say he intends it, but he's going to ignore the judgment of his loving disciples? You know, are we, when we're disobedient, do we just say, well, you know, I made a mistake, it's okay.
Well, God, he gives us the laws, but he wants us to be obedient.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in 40 right there, the first thing it says, but if they confess their iniquity.
Right. You have to confess. Mm-hmm. You just can't, in your mind, I know I've done wrong. That's it, you know. Everything's okay. But he kind of closes out, he's saying, God makes provisions to receive back into fellowship his wayward and sinful people. And says, so we should understand that we can find hope in the fact that God offers forgiveness to all of us who turn to him in repentance. Now, thinking of that, he has this kind of final thought question. We have to remember that some blessings are found in what you avoided rather than in what you gained.
Repeat that.
Okay.
Real slow.
All right. Blessings. I'll say that word first. Do we gain blessings or get a blessing by what we've gained or by something we avoided? Well, I mean,
well, you tell us your take on that's the best thing. Teacher, you tell us.
Well, yeah. My simple words. You're tempted, somebody's tempting you to do something wrong, you know, they're promising you this, you know, all you got to do, I'll just make up a story, all you got to do is drive this car from Montgomery, Alabama to New York City and park it at this certain street and leave it, and I'm going to give you X amount of dollars.
Just say no.
Well, I'm going to gain the money. But did I get a blessing? But if you say no, you pushed it away from you, the temptation, did you get a blessing from that? But then do you start feeling sorry? Well, I sure could have used that money. You know?
It's all about the money. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no.
Then how are you going to get back home?
Well, that's, and think about that.
Somebody doing something that they weren't supposed to, and that car blew up.
And killed a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. Then that's on your mind.
Yeah, and then somebody made a thing on Facebook, like, you thank the Lord, like, we laughed the other day about being late for Sunday school because you do stuff. But somebody had posted, you thank the Lord for things like, maybe you were 15 minutes late, and the Lord... But it was the Lord working in your life, because if you'd have been 15 minutes earlier, you would have been in the pileup, or you would have caused the accident, or you would have run the red light, and I would have been the person, you know, the 15 minutes. So we get blessings just in small ways that we don't know, just by circumstances that happen in your life. You're frustrated because you're late for church, but you don't know that you being late might be the new person coming in, don't know where to go, or you know, that kind of stuff. So I do believe things happen like that. You know, he places you where you need to be, so you do get blessings for things I guess we take for granted, you know. Or if I hadn't ran into Walmart, I wouldn't have run into her to say, well, we're doing our musical, you know, and she comes, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So the little things you get blessings about. And we're all guilty. I know it. You take them for granted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pick up something and just give it to somebody. And then,
well, it was like we heard so many testimonies of 9/11, why somebody was late for work, or
didn't go,
and we just heard that over and over and over, and the blessings that, you know, they didn't know why they were late, they didn't know why this accident happened, and then the blessing, you know, that they received by not being there.
And then now, those people, did they make a difference in somebody else's life? Like, my best friend lost her husband in 9/11, so as a family, we were able to minister to her. We were able to go and help with her kids, or, you know, we were able to be there for special events that. And you still read stuff about that, about the policeman or the fireman. Uh-huh. They show up for somebody's graduation that they lost their dad or mom. And so it just
goes on and on and on.
It's a ripple effect. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I missed y'all.
I just want to say, I don't always get to tell everybody in the choir what a wonderful job y'all are doing. So I just want to say thank you.
We sing on our Christmas is on the 10th. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? The 10th?
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock. The 10th at 5 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Our Christmas musical.
On Friday night.
No, Sunday.
Sunday the 10th.
Saturday's the party, the night.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Finish the thought.
Okay, let's have our benediction. Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.